Welcome to On The Moneyline, a podcast by MMA Play 365. I'm Newsom, and I'm here to break down UFC London, which goes down in my home country this weekend in London, England. My first thoughts on the card was that it's a little bit weak, and I still kind of, you know, I'm on that side of the fence, but looking into the fights, when I started doing tape, I do think there's going to be some fun fights. I think it's one of those fight cards that could be quite electric, low-key electric. And yeah, I think it's an event that lacks real star quality across the entire event. But again, we've got to appreciate it's a fight night and there are some fun fights on the card. And as for the breakdowns on this episode of the podcast, there's 15 fights, so there's a lot of fights. There's a lot to break down. I will try and run through a quick prediction, you know, just trying to get through it a little bit faster so people aren't waiting around an hour and a half, anything like that. But I do love breaking fights down and I do love talking fights, so we'll see how that plays out. Just before I get into those breakdowns though, as always, there's going to be a Baze AI recap from last weekend's event at UFC Vegas 77. Baze AI hit 77%, 10 correct predictions from 13, including predicting the only underdog winner of the night as well. So that's back-to-back 77% for Baze AI. So make sure you check out that recap if you are interested in AI and AI within UFC for our UFC prediction software as well. But now straight into the breakdowns, we get to the main event. We start there as we always do. We've got Tom Aspinall making his return from, you know, the horrific injury he suffered last time out in UFC London as well. And he fights Marcin Tybura. And Tom Aspinall, look, is a big favourite in this fight. I kind of understand why. However, I do think that, look, if Marcin Tybura came into this fight and, you know, he's gritty, he's grindy, he likes to close the distance, make fights ugly, and if he was to get the better of Aspinall, I can't say I'd be overly surprised is what I'm saying. I don't think he's going to, spoiler alert, but all I'm saying is, look, it's not going to be the first time Marcin Tybura's come in as like a plus 400 underdog and performed, so you have to take that into consideration. The thing is, if this was a three-round fight, I think Tybura would be much more live than what he is. But over five rounds, I definitely think that favours Aspinall. Aspinall has got this energy-efficient style where, you know, he's not lobbing in massive bombs coming out at 100 mile an hour. He's quite a light, or he's quite light. He's on the lighter end of a heavyweight, is what I'm trying to say. So he's going to be lighter than a lot of these heavyweights. And because of that, he's got speed, he's got good movement. And like I said, the cardio holds as well. Now, from a striking perspective, I do think Tom Aspinall is absolutely going to be the better striker here, the better boxer. I think he puts together combinations much better. And I think that because he can put volume and accumulate the combinations, I do think that he has power in that accumulation of strikes as well. So it wouldn't surprise me if he was mixing to the body, to the head, and also firing low kicks as well, you know, just methodically breaking Tybura down and ended up putting him out of there. In regards to the wrestling side, this is where it gets interesting, because Tybura is a good wrestler as well. So look, I think Tybura might be the better wrestler here, but if the fight hits the mat, I think Aspinall's got the better jiu-jitsu. Because he's got the better jiu-jitsu, the scrambles and things like that, he could end up on top of Tybura. We've seen what Aspinall's got on the mat, you know, when he fought Volkov, he looked phenomenal in regards to the jiu-jitsu. So, yeah, look, there's a lot of things pointing in the direction of Tom Aspinall. I do think overall he's the better quality fighter, the better skilled fighter, and I do think that his ceiling is also there. He's still young for the division as well. And like I say, over five rounds, I feel that that favours him also. It's just like I said, there's just something in the back of my mind that, look, Tybura, like I've already said, you know, previously in this breakdown already, he's performed as a big underdog before, and he might be able to perform as a big underdog again. The other, you know, thing that we need to consider here as well is, like I've already mentioned, Tom Aspinall is coming off that, you know, real bad leg injury that he suffered against Curtis Blaydes. I actually bet Curtis Blaydes in that fight as, you know, as a plus money underdog. I think he was like plus 120 I got him. And Curtis Blaydes in the early moments was looking good from a striking perspective. But of course, we didn't see the fight play out and things could have changed and happened. But obviously, Tom Aspinall, you know, damaged his leg. He was out for a long time, surgery, recovery, all that sort of stuff. So how Tom Aspinall looks coming in back into his first fight, just one bit of a, I wouldn't say it's a red flag, but it's a question mark because it's an unknown. We don't know if it's going to have affected anything in regards to his skill set, quality, or the way he performs. But the Tom Aspinall that we knew before that injury, I think, comes in here and gets the win. So I'm picking Tom Aspinall to win this fight. And in the co-main event, fan favourite in England for sure. I've been there a couple of times for Molly McCann's fights and it gets loud, it gets wild. She's fighting Julia Stoliarenko. Now, Julia Stoliarenko, I feel like, and I say this with respect or as much as respect as I can, I feel like she is an armbar robust type of fighter at a certain level in the UFC. I do think the lower level women fighters, I do feel that she could be more competitive from an all-round martial arts perspective across three rounds as well. But I just kind of feel that, again, when she fights up in competition and she's fighting a fighter that's better than her from a well-rounded perspective, from, you know, your boxing, your wrestling, your grappling, you know, everything that makes a mixed martial artist, I do think that she is a little armbar robust. Having said that, her specialty is armbars and she can lock them on quickly and that's where she's good. So, again, just like I said with the main event, I kind of feel that the price tag that's on her, it wouldn't be a complete shock if the fight hit the mat and Stoliarenko fired up this armbar and subbed McCann. However, do I think it's a low percentage outcome? Yes, I do. Do I think there's a small window of opportunity? Yes, I do. And for that reason, the probability of Stoliarenko armbarring McCann is reduced significantly. However, it does have to be taken into consideration because, like I say, if McMahon does take the fight down to the mat and she gets sucked by an armbar, I'm just not going to be surprised is all I'm saying. But again, from a striking perspective, Molly McCann's the better striker. She's more aggressive. She puts combinations together. She also thrives off that atmosphere and energy that the UK crowd provides for her. And, you know, like I've said, when they're going mental. So I do think McCann steps up a game here. I do think that she's going to be able to put a good performance on. And like I say, I think she can overwhelm Stoliarenko. Stoliarenko is going to be looking for that takedown, or she's going to be hoping that McCann takes her down just so she can engage her path to victory. But I think the smart thing for McCann to do here is to keep the fight standing, light her up on the feet, get that big KO as well in England, like she did last time out, and just make that, again, the energy, the atmosphere, just be absolutely electric for her. I think she's going to have fell in love with, you know, knocking an opponent out in devastating fashion in front of a home crowd. And I think against Stoliarenko, just watch, her team have got to have watched Stoliarenko, and I think her team will know that the way to, you know, replicate that big KO and get the crowd going crazy is going to be live in this fight. And yeah, I think that McCann's got every chance of just overwhelming Stoliarenko and eventually finishing her. And also, if Stoliarenko can't get the fight down to the mat and she can't engage that path to victory with the armbar, again, I do feel that she might have a little bit of quit in her, knowing that McCann's just really steamrolling her. So yeah, I think it's a good fight for McCann, but she really has to mind her P's and Q's here, because if the fight hits the mat, then Stoliarenko for sure is going to be live for an armbar, quick armbar, or, you know, building that up on the mat with the jiu-jitsu. So she's got to mind her P's and Q's, but it's hard to look past McCann here. I'm picking Molly McCann to win this fight. And in the next fight, this is great matchmaking, in my opinion. We've got Nathaniel Wood versus Andre Feely. And I think this is going to be a very typical Andre Feely fight. I think it's going to be close. I think it's going to be competitive. Both fighters are very similar in regards to their skill set. So they've both got good striking. They've both got good wrestling. They've both got good grappling. I think when you're looking at the quality within the different disciplines as well, I think they're also very even. Like, I think Andre Feely's wrestling might be a little bit better. I think Wood's striking might be a little bit cleaner. The jiu-jitsu, again, is very even on either side. I just don't think there's a real edge in this fight in regards to one fighter just being able to completely pull away from the skill set perspective. Now, what's interesting from a physical perspective is Andre Feely is going to have a big height advantage, is going to have a reach advantage as well. And where Wood looked great last time out against Jordan is just being able to coax Jordan into fighting his game. So Jordan was going like head to head with him, literally forehead on forehead and trading inside boxing range. Now, Jordan wasn't as tall and long as Feely, but he was a little bit taller and longer than Wood in that fight. And he just played directly into where Wood wanted the fight to go. Wood wanted to be inside of boxing range because he was the shorter fighter. He loves to exchange inside boxing range with punches and then mixing takedowns. And Jourdain gave Wood exactly what he wanted. And I don't think Feely's going to do that. I think there will be moments where the exchanging inside boxing range, those will be the moments that Wood gets the better of Feely, in my opinion. But outside of that, I think that Feely can stay long, he can stay on the outside, he can fire kicks in, he can maybe frustrate Wood a little bit. Wood's definitely going to have to work harder in this fight to close, because he's going to be the one that has to close the distance, get in tight, and, you know, look to make Feely struggle inside of those close quarters, inside of boxing range. So I think that it's stylistically, I think Feely could have a lot of success in that fight, in this fight, sorry. And when you look at the wrestling, Nathaniel Wood really broke down Jourdain and then broke the fight up in moments with wrestling. Feely's a really good wrestler. Sure, he can get taken down, but his wrestling is actually really good, and I think it's underrated. I also feel with Wood that Feely, and look, go back and look at Wood's record and the guys that he's fought in the UFC. I think Feely's the best fighter that Nathaniel Wood has faced in the UFC as well. So although it's not this monumental step up where Wood's going to be out of his depth, it's a step up nonetheless, because, like I say, I think Feely's the best fighter he's fought. For me, for Wood to win this fight, he's got to constantly and consistently get inside boxing range, really land good combinations on Feely, mixing the takedowns when he's in those close quarters as well. But I think Feely is a vet. He's been in there with some of the best fighters in the UFC, and I do think that if he keeps his range and is able to dictate the range and therefore the pace of the fight, he's got a chance of beating Wood. So for those reasons, I'm picking Andre Feely to win this fight. And in the next fight, we've got Andre Muniz versus Paul Craig. This could potentially be a grappler's delight. However, I do kind of think that we might see more striker than what we want to see. And again, I don't mean that in a bad way. I just mean, look, when you've got two real high-level grapplers, I like to see grappling to see who's the better grappler. But more often than not, when you've got two good grapplers or two good strikers, both fighters respect the qualities of the opponents, and the fight tends to just go in a completely different way. And depending on which way this fight goes, depends on who wins. So I think that if we are deceived and we do get a 15-minute kickboxing fight, I think Paul Craig should be favoured in that type of fight. I think he's the better striker. He fights longer. He uses more tools. He's more aggressive. I think he's got more power. And I just feel that Craig is going to be the better striker in this fight. I don't think it's going to be a complete shutout if it's a 15-minute kickboxing fight, but I do think Craig should be a favourite if we guaranteed that this fight's a 15-minute striking fight. However, if the fight does hit the mat, I think Muniz is the better grappler. And again, I know Craig's good, and I know he's got the triangles off his back and he's super dangerous, but I'd be absolutely shocked if Muniz was on top of Craig, or if Craig pulled guard and Craig ended up submitting Muniz with a triangle off his back. I would be very surprised. I think Andre Muniz, we know the level of BJJ he's got. And he's a guy that broke Jacare Souza's arm. And like I said, he's a world-class grappler. So it's where you think this fight's going to play out. Do we think it's going to be won and lost on the feet, or do we think it's going to be won and lost on the mat? Even though we've seen it time and time again, like I said, where two real specialists end up meeting and the fight takes place completely where they're not specialists, I do have to analyse this fight in regards to the fight hitting the mat and the jiu-jitsu playing a big part, because they are both jiu-jitsu players. They will both pull guard if they need to. They'll both shoot as well on other opponents. I just feel that Craig might be the one that tries to avoid the ground a little bit more in this fight, but I think within doing that, Muniz should be able to push forwards, get a hold of Craig and get the fight down to the mat, and that's where I think it's going to be difficult for Craig. So for those reasons, I'm picking Andre Muniz to win this fight. And in the next fight, we've got two very similar fighters here as well, just in a different discipline. We've got Jai Herbert versus Firas Siam. And both fighters are predominantly strikers. Firas Siam's got a kickboxing background. I like Siam as a fighter. I can see that he's progressing and developing, and he's going to have these fights every now and again where he falls a little bit short, but he learns a lot from them and he comes back better for it. Like we saw him against McKinney. You know, he lost to McKinney, came back, fought Figlak. Figlak's a fighter that I thought was going to be super dangerous in that fight, a fighter that I've been watching in Cage Warriors for a while, really skilled. Ziam came out of there and dominated him. So You can see the development from Ziam. You can see he's getting better and better each time he steps inside the cage, and he's still very young. On the other side, you've got Jai Herbert, who's now leaning on the older side for a fighter in this division. And Herbert, in my opinion, is a finished product. And I don't mean that in regards to, you know, he's done and he's declined or anything like that. I just mean I don't feel like we're going to see massive strides of improvements and developments within his game. We know Herbert's a good striker. We know he's got a good jiu-jitsu game. He does have sneaky good wrestling as well. So he's a well-rounded fighter. It's just like I say, I just don't think he's improving and getting better. Whereas Ziam, I think we will see a better version of Ziam in this fight to what we saw last time out, which is crazy to think about because Ziam looked great against Figlak. What's interesting in this fight, though, is both fighters are very tall and long for the division, and both fighters are normally the taller fighter when they step inside the cage against an opponent, and they have been for most of their careers. But here, they're both the same height, so they're both going to be tall, they're both going to be long, they both fire straight punches down the middle, they both like to mix in kicks as well. So from a stylistic perspective, from a physical perspective, it's very close in regards to both of those aspects of the fight. It's just which fighter's going to pull away, and I kind of feel like that's going to be Ziam. Like I said, Ziam's improving and developing, so I expect a better version of him inside the cage this time out, but he's also got that youthful energy. He's also really growing into his frame, into a man as well, and you can see that he's getting a little bit bigger each time out and a little bit stronger to the point where he might have to end up moving up a division at some point. I think obviously he'll be fine for this fight, but Ziam, not only is he getting better, he's getting bigger, he's getting stronger, he's getting more experience. And when you're looking at the youthful energy versus the more aging fighter in Herbert, the other thing with Herbert as well is, although he hasn't been, or he wasn't really hurt last time out against Klein, I actually bet him against Klein as well. I felt really robbed on that point deduction that I thought was very soft. But even though Herbert wasn't hurt last time out, he's still been knocked out badly a couple of times, so still some question marks on there in regards to the durability. And then when you look at which fighter might mix things up from the striking, before Ziam's last fight, I would say that's more likely to be Herbert, but Ziam went out there and took Figlak down three times, looked great from a jiu-jitsu perspective, controlled positions, and again, just looked like it improved and developed. So I think there's a lot of upside here for Ziam. I'm picking Firas Ziam to win this fight. And in the next fight, we've got Lerone Murphy versus Joshua Koulibaly. I think this is a low-key, really good fight because both fighters have got good qualities. They've both got absolutely no problems in standing and exchanging toe-to-toe. So it's going to be a good fight. I think it's going to have a lot of action in it as well. I think Murphy was a little bit fortunate last time out. I didn't think he won the fight. I did also have a bet on Gabriel Santos, but I thought that Gabriel Santos did a much better job of mixing things up and probably should have took the decision, but it was a close fight nonetheless. And although Santos in his last fight didn't really go the way he wanted it to go, I still think he's a solid fighter. So the fact that Murphy's gone to a close fight with a fighter like Santos does tell me that he's got some quality around him. And Joshua Koulibaly, like I say, although he does have some quality himself and he does have some power, I think that Murphy's the more complete mixed martial artist. So when it does come to the wrestling and the grappling, I think he's probably the one that's likely to mix things up a little bit more. I think from a striking perspective, the fight's going to be very close. I don't think there's a real edge there. But like I said, when it comes to actually extending past the striking and which fighter is going to be stronger, which fighter is going to be the one being more aggressive and moving forwards and the one that's more likely to mix things up, I think Lerone Murphy's got a more complete MMA game than Koulibaly. So like I said, close fight. I do think that both fighters are going to have the moments. We could end up with one of those types of fights where we get another close decision, maybe a split decision as well. But when I have to give a prediction from the analysis that I've made on the fight, I do think Murphy's the more likely fighter to mix things up. He's slightly more well-rounded, more of a complete fighter, and therefore he's probably got a couple of different paths to victory here, whereas I think Koulibaly's path to victory is just within the striking, which is going to be close anyway. So for those reasons, I'm picking Lerone Murphy to win this fight. And in the next fight, we've got Davy Grant versus Daniel Marcos. Daniel Marcos obviously coming off that great win in Brazil against Simon Oliveira as an underdog as well. Really looked like a solid fighter. We thought that he had good, sharp, technical striking from his contender series fight, but looking at how he performed against Simon, just an unbelievable performance. One thing that I do like about Marcos is he doesn't rush anything either. He's quite patient and he's good at fighting on the back foot. So even if he's just in the start of the fight, making his reads and trying to get his timing down and things like that, and these opponents putting pressure on him, he's very calm, patient and composed, moving backwards and counter-striking whilst he's building into the fight. Davy Grant, on the other hand, a staple of UK MMA. We all know who Davy Grant is. Dangerous Davy Grant, always in there, always in for a scrap. Good qualities, good striking, good low kicks. He's got a good ground game as well. So again, from a matchmaking perspective, it's actually a really good fight. Now, again, the one thing that, or the couple of things that I think Marcos has got on his side is age. I think with him being a little bit younger, a little bit fresher in this game, not being in as many wars, you know, doesn't have all that scar tissue and things like that, I think Marcos could have advantages just from that youthful energy perspective and, again, just being the fresher fighter in there. And I also, the other thing that I think Marcos has got on his side here, like I said, not only is he good moving forwards and backwards, but I do think he's the more technical fighter. I do think he's going to be a little bit more difficult to beat than Grant is difficult to beat. And although Grant's going to be in his face and he'll be there for the fight, and Grant's really difficult to get out of there and get away from you, I think Grant's got some defensive issues that Marcos can capitalize on striking. Grant is quite hittable. He does get hit in most of his fights. And like I said, I think Marcos can be able to capitalize on that. The other thing that I didn't like from Grant against the Lewis Smolka fight, for example, is, look, Grant went in there, battered Lewis Smolka in round one, almost had him knocked out at the end of round one. And then in round two, Smolka came back and beat him in round two. And then, yeah, Grant took round three and eventually looked great in the end. But Lewis Smolka, after taking an absolute beating, came back and beat Davy Grant in that second round. So Grant does allow fighters to fight inside the cage. He, even if he is dominant in a round, he will let fighters back into fights also. And yeah, I just feel that, look, Davy Grant's on the older age of the fighters in this division. And I think Marcos is slightly fresher, slightly younger, slightly cleaner, crisper with the striking, better technical striker overall. I think from a defensive perspective, Grant might have some holes in the striking. Marcos can fight well moving forwards and backwards. So yeah, I think there's some upside here on Marcos. I'm picking Daniel Marcos to win this fight. And in the next fight, we've got Danny Roberts versus Johnny Parsons. Johnny Parsons making his UFC debut. He's a fun fighter to watch, Parsons. A little bit low volume, but he's got hard strikes, hard low kicks. He's one of these zombie types of fighters where he'll just walk through anything that you're throwing at him just to get close to you to land his own strikes. Like I said, if he could pick up his volume, I think he'd be a much more difficult fighter to beat. But even still saying that, he's got power, he makes life uncomfortable, and you know, you'll hit him with your hardest shot and he'll just walk through it. And again, that can't be, you know, that can't be great on the mind of the opponent that's just hit somebody with a hard shot and they're still there and in your face and moving forwards. Now, Danny Roberts, for me, I think he's the better mixed martial artist here. I think it, from a striking perspective, he doesn't hit as hard as Johnny Parsons, but I do think that he's more technical. I do think he has better volume. I think Roberts is going to be the better wrestler, the better grappler here. Johnny Parsons can be taken down. So although Roberts is, with his background as striker, I do think he's developed his wrestling well, and Parsons has shown a hole there, so it could be a path to victory for Roberts. And yeah, I think that Roberts, multiple paths to victories here. The striking's going to be close. We've got technique versus power. The judges do sometimes side with the power there, but then again, mixing things up, that's more likely to be Roberts, and he's more likely to have more success with that. The only sort of red flag that I've got with Roberts, a few question marks, is again that durability. Like, I don't think it's a huge concern. I don't think he's got like a glass chin or anything like that. But he's been in wars. He's been knocked out badly before. And Parsons hits hard, thrives in wars. So there is that question mark in the back of my mind of, what if Danny Roberts can't get the space he needs in this fight and Johnny Parsons does just continuously push forward, make this fight a war, hit Danny Roberts with some hard shots. In that type of fight, I do think I'd favour Parsons. But again, Danny Roberts is a vet. He's been around for years. I think if he feels that Parsons is dictating the range of the fight and getting in close too often, I think he can just tie up with him or take him down. And that could be the real equaliser in this fight for Roberts. So for those reasons, I'm picking Danny Roberts to win this fight. And in the next fight, we've got Mark Dicasey versus Joel Alvarez. I think this is probably one of the best fights on the entire card, if I'm being honest. I'm not sure why it's so low down on the card order, but it's going to be a fun fight. I think both fighters are aggressive. Both fighters will want to stand the ground. And yeah, I just think it's going to be fun. Now, with Joel Alvarez, Joel Alvarez is very tall. He's very long. He is big for the division. Has had some sketchy weight cuts. So again, that's something to take into consideration. But he's a very good guard player. So if you take him down, he's got that spider guard where he'll throw his legs up for triangles, for arm bars. He'll make it really uncomfortable for as long as you're in his full guard. So because of that, and because he has success with finishing fights off his back, he has absolutely no problems in going forwards, being aggressive, throwing big kicks, throwing big punches, because if you take him down, he's cool with that. He's absolutely fine with that. And he's also got 0% takedown defense in the UFC. Every takedown attempt on him has been completed. And again, you can put that down to poor takedown defense, or you can put it down to the fact that he doesn't really try to defend because he's cool with being on his back, and he has success subbing fighters when they're in his guard. Now, with Mark Dykhazy, I think that Mark is going to be a very difficult fighter for Joel Alvarez. So Joel Alvarez is going to have a height advantage, a reach advantage, but I do think that benefits Mark because the hips are going to be a little bit closer for the wrestling. Mark's a really strong wrestler. I do think he gets takedowns in this fight. I think Joel Alvarez won't mind him getting takedowns, at least not for the initial part of the fight anyway. The initial moments, I think Alvarez will welcome takedowns, but Mark, I think, is going to go in there. I think he's going to take him down. Mark's jiu-jitsu is also really underrated, really good as well. And I just don't think that Alvarez is going to just be able to throw up an armbar or a triangle and get someone like Mark out of there, you know, that comfortably from guard. And that's if Mark even stays in guard. It'd be good for Mark to pass half guard, potentially get into mount maybe, but just finding a position that he's comfortable with. But even if that position is in guard, I feel like this fight, it's more likely to go with Mark getting takedowns, Alvarez trying to submit Mark with armbars and triangles off his back. And the longer the fight goes on, the more failed submission attempts occur because of that, and the more it just starts defeating Alvarez a little bit mentally. I actually think Alvarez's best chance to win this fight is by trying to keep it on the feet and trying to hit Mark at range, because he does have the length and the height advantage. But Mark's wrestling, like I say, it's really, really good. I think he's going to get into range. I think he's going to take Joel Alvarez down. There might be some, you know, tricky moments for Mark, moments where he has to, you know, be fully focused, not make a mistake. But the longer the fight goes on, the more takedowns I think we see, and the harder it gets for Alvarez to get Mark out of there. And once they're both sweaty, I think the triangle and the armbars are just completely off anyway. So yeah, overall, I think it's a good fight stylistically for Mark to be able to get his wrestling going and then just to remain in control on the mat. Mark does, like I've already mentioned, have to be very focused, mind his P's and Q's, because Alvarez is dangerous off his back. But again, I'd be shocked if Alvarez, you know, hit that armbar or triangle from guard against Mark. I really would. So for those reasons, I'm picking Mark Dykhazy to win this fight. And in the next fight, we've got another newcomer from England. We've got Mick Parkin versus Jamal Pogues. Now, for those that don't know Mick Parkin cross-trains in England with Andrew Fisher up north. And then he also does his sparring and gets in some hard rounds with the likes of Tom Aspinall. Obviously needs no introduction, and I've already broke his fight down anyway. Obviously headlining the event, and also get some hard rounds in with Phil DeFries as well, who in my opinion is one of the best heavyweights on planet Earth right now. For those that think that's a crazy statement and are unsure if Phil DeFries is the KSW heavyweight champion, absolutely wiping through top quality competition over in KSW as well. So Phil's like a bear as well. He's absolutely massive. He's got great wrestling, great, you know, jiu-jitsu, good topside control. So the fact that Parkin is getting really solid rounds with Aspinall, who we know is a world-class heavyweight, Phil DeFries, KSW champion, world-class heavyweight, you know that he's going to... And listen, they go hard in that gym as well. That gym, by the way, I know I'm digressing a little bit, but that gym was created just for big guys. So just like Team Alpha Male in America, where there's, you know, the lower weighted fighters going to Team Alpha Male to get training in with fighters around their weight. In the UK, we've got a severe lack of quality in numbers at the heavier weight. So light heavyweight, heavyweight, we manage one of the best UK prospects, amateur MMA, Brandon Guest, who was a light heavyweight, and just finding fights for him, not just in England, but in Europe at light heavyweight, of quality fighters, quality opponents, is just very difficult. So Tom Aspinall opened that gym just to get a load of the big guys in there so they can all get training in and rounds in with guys of their size. So again, going back to Mick Parkin, you just know that he's going to have some solid rounds in the bag for this camp. He's been training with some good, real good fighters as well. And I just don't think that Jamal Pogues is going to offer anything to Mick Parkin than that he hasn't seen from Phil DeFreeze and Tom Aspinall. I just really, really don't. The one question that I do have with Parkin from a ceiling and skill set perspective is I don't know how high that ceiling is. I don't know how far he's going to go. I'm really, really unsure from that aspect, just because he hasn't fought many quality opponents. Obviously, his contender series opponent was good, but outside of that, you know, the level of competition is severely low. But we've seen that with other fighters, like Giga Chakadze had a low level of competition leading into the UFC, and he turned out to be a great fighter. So I'm unsure of the ceiling of Parkin, but for this fight, it doesn't really matter. I just know that Parkin will have got real good, solid rounds. And also, obviously, Aspinall headlines this card. He's been in camp. Phil DeFreeze fought last weekend, so he's been in camp. So Parkin's not only had these bodies around him, but also bodies that are training hard in camp as well. So look, from Pogues' perspective, I know I've spent a lot of time on Parkin, but from Pogues' perspective, Pogues is a volume-based striker, quite low volume in my opinion though. He does have a wrestling side to him, so again, that's something that I'm really interested in seeing, because I do think Pogues will look to take Parkin down, but I think Parkin's got good scrambles. He can get back up to his feet. He's very quick at clearing his legs from guard as well and standing back up. So when Pogues fought Josh Parisian, Pogues did get some takedowns on Parisian, but eventually, the longer the fight went on, Pogues started slowing down a little bit. The takedowns weren't there. They were a little bit more desperately shot. And yeah, look, I think Pogues is going to have his moments in this fight, but I think Mick's going to be better prepared. I think that he's had the more harder rounds with better level guys, and I think it's a fight for him that's good stylistically. And I do think that he's going to get the win. So I'm picking Mick Parkin to win this fight. In the next fight, this one should be violent. We've got Brian Barberena versus Mahmoud Muradov. And although it's going to be violent, we know what Barberena brings to the table. He's forward, pressure, aggression, in your face. He'll eat three shots if it means he can land three back. He's that type of fighter, a bit of a fan favourite and always fun to watch. However, Mahmoud Muradov, I think he'll welcome that. I think he will not shy away from any type of fight with Barberena, but I just think Muradov is a better quality striker. I think he's probably going to be the better wrestler. I think his topside control can be utilised in this fight. Again, he's not a BJJ ace on the mat, but he's good enough to maintain a top position and keep Barberena down once he's settled. I do think it's a difficult fight for Barberena, because I don't think... Look, the fight, in my opinion, is probably going to be won and lost on the feet. I think both fighters will welcome the striking battle. If any fighter's likely to mix it up, I do think it's more likely to be Muradov, though. So that's where I feel that he might have that slight second path to victory. But from a striking perspective, yeah, Barberena is gritty, grindy, ugly, and he'll be in your face. But Muradov's really clean, really sharp. The one thing that I can see maybe Barberena trying to take advantage of is maybe the gas tank. Look, if Barberena comes into this fight early in round one, gets a hold of Muradov, pushes him up against the cage and just makes it super difficult, super suffocating, then maybe Muradov slows down and Barberena can take over late with that gritty, ugly style. But again, it's a big ask against Muradov, who is strong for the division, physically strong and just really skilled from a striking perspective. So as Barberena's coming in, Muradov's going to have answers for being able to either counter or just strike and halt Barberena's forward pressure and aggression and halt that movement as well. So I do think it's a good fight for Muradov, who's the cleaner fighter. I think he's the more technical fighter and the fighter that should look better throughout the fight, wherever the fight goes as well. So for those reasons, I'm picking Mahmoud Muradov to win this fight. Next up, we've got Ketlen Verhaeghe versus Pani Khianzad. Bit of a strange fight, if I'm being honest. Pani Khianzad clearly getting a step up in competition. Ketlen Verhaeghe taking a step down in competition. However, I do feel that Verhaeghe was a little bit unfortunate in the last fight against Pennington. I did think she won the fight, but it was a close and competitive fight. But this is the thing. I do feel that Ketlen Vaheda is still a fighter that can compete with the best at the top of the division. Whereas I'm not saying Pani Kianzad can't, it's just if she can, we just don't know that yet. And this is why she's getting a step up in competition, just to see exactly where she's at. Because if Kianzad comes out here and beats Vaheda by whatever way, whatever method of victory, I think that it's going to really boost her to the top of the division. And Kianzad does have good skills, and she is well-rounded, good patient striker, nice straight shots, can take an opponent down, decent topside control as well. It's just a kind of feel that Vaheda is going to be better everywhere here. I think from a technical striking perspective, it's close. Maybe Kianzad might have the slight technical advantage. Maybe Kianzad might be that little bit faster striking. But Vaheda's a good striker. She'll mix things up herself. She's very strong and physical. Then when it comes to the wrestling, I think Vaheda's wrestling's better. In the jiu-jitsu, I think it's night and day between them. So it all depends on whether Vaheda decides to take Kianzad down. But this is the thing. If it's a 15-minute kickboxing fight, I think Vaheda wins. Albeit it should be quite close in a 15-minute kickboxing fight. I've got to add that in. It will be close, but I think Vaheda wins. If the fight is determined on the wrestling and grappling, again, I think Vaheda absolutely wins, and she could potentially submit Kianzad as well. That's not out of the question. So, yeah, look, I like the step-up in competition for Kianzad. I think it might be just a level too far up at this point. There might have been, and again, I can't think of a fighter off the top of my head, but there might have been some middle ground between Vaheda and the quality of her previous opponent, but yeah, look, I think it might be competitive at times for Kianzad, but I do expect Vaheda to win, so I'm picking Ketlen Vaheda to win this fight. And in the next fight, this should be fun as well. We've got Chris Duncan versus Yanal Ashmuz. Now, Ashmuz really shocked me in his last fight because Sam Patterson's a fighter that I've been watching on the UK scene for a long time, and then through Brave as well, and a fighter that I actually really liked, really skilled, and in my opinion, I thought that Sam Patterson had already fought and beaten better level of competition than, or better level opponents than Ashmuz. But man, Ashmuz went in there, closed the distance, got in that boxing range, and it was one of the most brutal knockouts I've ever seen. Not with the knockout and the impact itself, but with the fact that Patterson was still trying to wrestle and grapple with the referee after, you know, all his corner team and the medicals team and the doctors were surrounding him. He was still trying to grapple the referee for minutes after the fight. So that's one telltale sign that the knockout was very, very serious. And it just speaks to the power that Ashmuz has. He rocked him with the first shot and then on his way down. So it's like when a fighter throws one shot, they'll normally throw another one behind. But if that one shot does drop the opponent, the shot that they throw behind is a reactive shot, normally misses because the opponent's on the way down to the mat, but that second shot hit Sam Patterson as well. So, like I say, brutal knockout. Ashmuz has clearly got power. He's also got a decent all-round game. He's got okay wrestling, okay grappling. He can be taken down, though. We've seen that in previous fights. Now, with Chris Duncan, with the way that I've just analysed and broken down Ashmuz, that should be a massive red flag for Duncan, because Duncan, normally, we'd expect him to come in there, brawl and exchange punches, and it just, that type of style, if Duncan comes in there with that type of style, it favours Ashmuz completely, because I think Ashmuz will land another one of those hard shots. It's just with Chris Duncan, he's been training at American Top Team. I think this might be his first full camp at American Top Team. Trains closely with Grant Dawson and other elite fighters over in Florida. And against Omar Morales, I bet Omar Morales in that fight at a pick'em, and yeah, it was close, completely disagreed with the 30-27 from the judges, but that's a different conversation, and that's 30-27 for Morales as well. I thought that's bullshit, even though I had money on Morales. But Chris Duncan looks like he'd completely not only leveled up as a fighter, but he'd also changed his style because of the developments as well. And he became more of a, he had more of a wrestling style and more of a gritty, grindy approach. And he didn't actually stay in those wild exchanges with Morales, which I thought he would. And that didn't give Morales the opportunity to knock him out. So I kind of feel with Ashmuz, if Duncan has leveled up some more, he's done more training with Grant Dawson, that can only improve you. We see what Grant Dawson did a few weeks ago against Damir Ismagulov. So Duncan's going to be improving and levelling up. And I do think his style is going to be starting to mould more and more to the style of Dawson. And if that's correct, then I think that he comes in this fight and beats Ashmuz. Because Duncan has got to know that the two opportunities that he got to get into the UFC Well, one of them was taken away because he brawled and got knocked out. The other one was almost taken away because he was brawling, nearly got knocked out, and just got that super impressive comeback knockout, which, you know, shook the world. He must know that this brawling type just doesn't work for him, and he almost didn't get in the UFC because of it. And I feel that's why he's changing. He comes into this fight, in my opinion, I think he's more wrestling-based, grinding, looking to take Ashmoos down, taking that power away from Ashmoos, taking the knockout opportunities away from Ashmoos. And for those reasons, I'm picking Chris Duncan to win this fight. And in the next fight, we've got Bruno Brazil versus Sean O'Bannon. Sean O'Bannon making a UFC debut out of Ireland. To be fair to Bannon, she's looked quite good in Invicta, and she's been dominant in her fights, and she's got this real good kicking game, but she's also well-rounded where she can score takedowns. She's got decent topside control. She's a really good fighter, and I feel that, well, a really good fighter for what we've seen outside the UFC. And I do think this Bruno Brazil fight is going to be a real good measuring stick to exactly where Bannon is at in regards to her ceiling, because that's just one thing I'm a little bit unsure of. Now, with Bruno Brazil, she disappointed last time out against Denise Gomes as a, I think she was a big favourite anyway, but yeah, people expected Bruno Brazil to really put it on Denise Gomes. Now, the one thing I will say about that fight is that that loss for Bruno Brazil has aged beautifully, because Denise Gomes went out there a couple of weeks ago against Yasmin Haruge, who was a big favourite against her, and beat her, finished her. So the loss for Bruno Brazil to Denise Gomes has aged well, because we now know Denise Gomes is a real solid fighter and a fighter to keep an eye on. So it's going to be an interesting fight here. I do lean towards Sean O'Bannon though. The reason being is I kind of feel that she's got that dog in her, whereas with Bruno Brazil, when things, she's very clean, crisp, technical, and, you know, likes to put on that sharp performance. But when things aren't going her way, I do feel that her performance and the way she fights really does take a massive dip. And if that happens in this fight, if Sean O'Bannon's making Bruno Brazil frustrated with the kicks on the outside and then maybe scoring the odd takedown here and there, and just making Bruno Brazil not be able to get a real foothold in the fight, I think that Brazil could start getting a little bit frustrated. I think she could start slowing down a little bit. That performance could start being declined a little bit inside the cage, and all that kind of stuff favours Bannon. Of course, we are making assumptions because we don't know if that's exactly how the fight's going to play out. It's a little bit one of those fights where you kind of just need to see it to then have an understanding of where both fighters are at, A, now, and B, moving forwards. But for now, with the prediction based on what I've got, I'm going with Sean O'Bannon to win this fight. And the last fight of the 15 to break down, a relatively short notice fight as well, it only got added I think last week, we've got Jafel Filho versus Daniel Baraz, and this should be fireworks. Jafel Filho, he's trains out of Nova U now, and he's got really good dangerous jiu-jitsu. He's the type of fighter that you don't really want to hit the mat with. He is solid. He almost or should have got Mokaev out of there with that knee bar. How Mokaev did not tap, I'll never know. But, you know, it almost got Mokaev out of there. And, of course, Mokaev's one of the most hyped fighters in the UFC right now. But with that good jiu-jitsu, allows him, like I said with Joel Alvarez earlier, it allows Filho to really come forwards, be aggressive, put power on his strikes, knowing that if his opponent takes him down, he's cool with that because that's where he's good. Now, Daniel Baraz on the other side, he is a very dangerous fighter. He's very good with his combinations with his hands. He will go to the body hard, and then he'll go to the head. He reminds me a little bit of John Lineker in regards to how he mixes between the body and head with his punch combinations. Waits for the hands to come down, starts going to the head, waits for the hands to go up, starts ripping to the body, and he's finished and hurt a lot of opponents with the body shots. But he's also got a real dangerous low kick as well. Can really mash up the leg of his opponents with a low calf kick. So he's a very dangerous fighter on the feet, and it's going to be interesting to see where this fight plays out, because if Filho can get Baraz down, I think that Filho could do some good work and potentially get Baraz out of there. But Baraz, if he keeps the fight standing, although Filho's got some power and some good skills on the feet, I think Baraz will be able to put some solid combinations together and absolutely piece Filho up to the point where Filho is starting to shoot desperation takedowns. And of course, we've seen this happen before. We've read the script, we've read the story so many times of, you know, the jiu-jitsu guys now getting forced backwards and getting lit up on the feet, and now he can't get the fight down to the mat. The only other thing for Perez, and this is a little bit of a worry actually, is he loves shooting takedowns as well. Takedowns are a part of his game. For as good of a striker he is, he's got really good takedowns. Does he take Filio down? And I think if he does, he's making a mistake here, but it's kind of within his game. And that's one of the concerns that I've got with Perez, the fact that he might actively engage in the area where Filio is best. However, from a prediction perspective, I do think that, look, Perez isn't a bad grappler. It's just I think Filio's better. But on the feet, I think Perez can do some really good work here and really hurt Filio. So for those reasons, I'm picking Daniel Perez to win this fight. And that's all for this episode of the podcast. A lot of fights to talk about. I think I've done it in a decent time, if I'm being honest. But yeah, hope you've enjoyed the breakdowns. And if you've taken any knowledge from it, or if I've helped you cash a bet, or, you know, helped you in your analysis for whatever reason, drop a like, drop a subscription to the YouTube channel. It really does help us. I really do appreciate it. That's the only thing I really ask of you guys that are tuning in and listening. If you are betting this weekend, I hope you crush the bookies. Unless you're betting against the fighter I'm betting on, then I hope you lose. As always, I'm Newsome. Thanks for listening. We'll see you again next week.